Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. My family loved the recipes they sent over. This week, you could try out the Green Goddess Chicken Salad Lettuce Wraps with roasted almonds, or the Black Angus Steak with balsamic glazed radishes and Brussels sprouts, or feel free to choose from their seemingly limitless options. Everything is pre-measured, pre-portioned, and easy to prepare. Plus, Sunbasket meals are dietitian approved, so you can feel confident that you're putting a healthy and delicious meal on the table. Sunbasket is proud to work with the best farms and suppliers to fill their meal kits with organic fresh produce and responsibly sourced antibiotic-free meats and seafood. No matter your lifestyle, Sunbasket caters to your kind of healthy. It's easy to customize recipes to meet your exact needs. If you want to swap red meat for chicken or turkey, or swap in a vegan protein, they are completely flexible. Go to sunbasket.com/mindful today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/mindful to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Are you tired of waking up feeling sore and stiff in the morning? Or maybe the words bone on bone are all too familiar? Chances are it has to do with the fact that your body isn't making as much of one specific type of protein as it used to. That protein is collagen. The good news, simply adding it back into your diet is scientifically backed to support bone density, soothe joint discomfort, and boost mobility. Plus, it's the most abundant protein in the body, so not only does it reinvigorate the body with denser bone health, but studies have shown dramatic improvements in hair, skin, nails, and digestion. Personally, I notice when I add collagen to my diet, there's a noticeable improvement in the quality of my skin. Native Path is a single ingredient collagen, no fillers, no additives, no artificial sweeteners, and they third-party test for heavy metals. It is also completely flavorless, so you could put it in anything. Coffee, smoothies, oatmeal, whatever. They even have an 800 number you can call with questions about usage, recipes, ingredients, and you'll speak to a live human being ready to help. Get the full story free of charge by visiting getnativepath.com/mindful. That website again is getnativepath.com/mindful. That is getnativepath.com/mindful.
We're all bioelectromagnetic beings. We think what's happening on Earth won't affect humans. That shows their lack of understanding and awareness and knowledge. The North Magnetic Pole is becoming the South, and the South is becoming the North. Now, we can say that's no big deal. You're bioelectromagnetic. You can take a big magnet and put a little magnet on it, and a little magnet's going to become magnetized to the big magnet. You're on planet Earth, which is the big magnet. You're the little magnet. What happens to the big magnet is going to affect the little magnet. The big magnet is destabilized and unstable and shifting right now. The planet is very unstable electromagnetically because of the shift, and people think it doesn't affect them, but that's one of the things causing so much emotional instability on the planet right now. And we see it in terms of the social unrest and the economic collapse and the chaos. It's happening because of the frazzled consciousness electromagnetically on the planet.
Jim Fortin, thanks for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here, Les. Thank you so much for the invite today.
Sure. This was an unexpected last-minute interview, and I'm kind of excited. Didn't have a lot of time to learn about you, but I definitely found quick interest in what you were doing. There was something that stood out that I've seen a lot over the years that I don't really understand that maybe you could give me the 101 on. This NLP, you have been practicing neuro-linguistic programming for quite some time, it sounds like.
Yeah, for 30 years.
Okay. Can you start by just expanding on what that's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So NLP, I started studying that back in 1992. NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, is what Tony Robbins uses as a facilitator to help people create change. It's a psychological model. It was created back in the 70s, or discovered, just created, whatever you want to call it, by Richard Bandler and John Grinder, a linguist and a mathematician. And what they understood was that there's language models that we communicate with that represent our subjective reality, meaning we all have a reality inside of our mind. So NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, has put together patterns of models of reality that people live in their head. It's very general, but it's also very powerful, in that we have models and ways we represent things to ourselves and to other people, and how we perceive and interpret and interact with other people. So NLP, long and short, is what I call the psychology of subjective experience, being able to communicate with yourself and your own mind and understanding how your mind works.
Okay. And you use that as, you consider yourself a transformational coach?
Interesting word. You consider yourself to be. Yeah, who knows? I mean, like, who the hell knows? That's what I do. I've done transformation for many years. Transformation, many people want more, better, different in life. Many people look at rah-rah motivation, etc. Transformation is shifting who we are, like a metamorphosis, at a core level. So whatever we want to call that, transformation, metamorphosis, core level shifting, whatever we want to call it, that's what I do, is help people shift at a core level, subconscious identity level.
Gotcha. So NLP is like just one of the tools in the toolkit in
Correct.
That process. Okay.
Which I know your listeners come from all different walks of life, kind of same flavor as you and I. My background, though, is a whole lot of self-study, neuroscience. I mean, I'm a voracious learner. 30 years of NLP training, but I also apprentice with a real shaman, not someone who considers himself to be a shaman, not someone who, air quote, practices shamanism and teaches it, but my brother-in-law, my sister's husband. If you went to the Amazon, he's the kind of shaman you would find in the Amazon or in Siberia or South Africa or China. He's a shaman. He's a babalao. He's a healer. And I've apprenticed with him now since 1996. So I've taken all these things and put them together in a transformational program.
What does that look like when you say I've apprenticed with the shaman?
That's a great question. Apprentice with a shaman. He had a very hard apprentice, meaning he was literally immersed in shamanism for about a decade. And he worked with dozens of shamans, and one in particular that was what's called his benefactor, which means his sponsor, his main shaman teaching him whatever. So I've worked with him along his side, where he's taught me everything from sacred geometry, mathematics, ancient, you know, he's covered many facets of humanity and human knowledge and wisdom and understanding as it relates to spirituality. My family has been inside the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid twice doing ceremony. We've been inside Teote Huayacan twice doing ceremony. We have been to Uluru, Taco Canyon, Machu Picchu, Isla de Sol. We've been in power vortexes all over the world doing spiritual ceremonies. But let me back up here a little further. This will resonate with your listeners. We are energetic beings, every single one of us. We have consciousness running through us. Shamanism, in the way that I have apprenticed, is not, oh, it's like reading a book, here, learn these things. That's not what we do. It's basically all alternative reality, dream time work, connecting in dream time, everything from what people call astral projection to lucid dreaming, etc. It's all non-ordinary reality work.
Interesting. You touched on a few things there that I'm curious about.
Sure.
First, you've been inside the pyramid?
My family spent 2 nights inside the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid. However, when I say my family, that's the one trip I, like an idiot, didn't go on. I wanted every other trip except that trip. I had a big event in New York. I lived there for years. And I'm like, I can't make it, which was probably one of the biggest mistakes of my life, not to go on that particular journey.
What do you think the Great Pyramid is? What do you think its function was?
Number one, it's right at the gravitational center of the Earth. Not to digress here, but to help people understand in a very analytical way, have you ever read Graham Hancock's book, Fingerprints of the Gods?
I've watched his recent documentary thing. I don't think I've read any of his books. I've heard them referenced several times.
Yeah, Fingerprints of the Gods is all about the pyramids. Now, the pyramids, I can answer in probably 8 different ways and different, you know, go in different directions with this, is that it's the gravitational center of the Earth. It's a vortex. It's an anchor. It's anchoring grids on the planet because we have pyramids all over the planet. We'll just hop around here. I don't know how crazy your listeners are in a good way.
I don't know either, but I could tell you I can get pretty crazy. So
okay,
run with it.
Then let's run with it. So can I. But working with a shaman, I've been in many non-ordinary realities. I've seen things that people are like, no, that can't exist. There's no way. And I've even experienced things that have happened that I was told it happened that way so that I wouldn't be able to rationalize it and make sense of it, and I would have to accept the experience for what it was. So
can you give an example of what you're just talking about?
I'll give you a couple. So my brother-in-law, being a shaman, we were doing ceremony at Chichen Itza in 1996. And I went down a day before everyone else got there, my brother-in-law, my sister, the rest of my family, and some other people. And somebody that's with me, we got really drunk on cheap tequila. Pretty bad. Next day, we're in the van. We're going to Chichen Itza. And he's sitting behind me in the van. It's a passenger van, like four rows. And it's really quiet in the van. No one's speaking a word. And he's working on me energetically, and I can feel it. And I don't even know why I said this. I said, you know, I feel so bad. I'm going to leave my body until we get there. I have no idea why I even thought that. I didn't speak it. I just thought it. He's behind me, taps me on the shoulder, and goes, hey, get back in your body. There's time for that later. And that's one of the first times I'd had something that I couldn't figure out. I couldn't make sense of. He would have no way of knowing that. But working with shamans, we work with the elements, earth, wind, fire, and water. And in the work that I do with him, we burn candles in 7-day glass tubes. You might have seen these before, like maybe in a Mexican market where they're cylindrical, they're tubes, they're candles about a foot tall, and they're different colors. So we burn these in configuration, fire, of the elements. And one time, one of my candles broke, but I had it in a glass container in case it broke. So I tried to blow it out before I went to bed, which you're not supposed to do, but I'm like, it's a fire hazard. I tried to blow it out and it relit itself. And I'm like, okay, I'm tired. I'm going to go to bed. To heck with it. Next morning, my phone rang. And this is back when we had phones on your nightstand and everything in the 1990s. My phone rang and I didn't open my eyes. I just rolled over, pulled it off the base, whatever you called it back then, put it back down again. And it rang again. And I answered, nobody's there. I opened my eyes. My room is full of smoke. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my candles, they're chugging smoke here. So I ran to the kitchen, got some water, and dumped it in the candles to put the candle out. The little wick, that's all that was burning, was a wick, no wax, nothing. And my candle shot up like a bazooka up the wall, fire all the way up the wall. And it burned everything I had on the back of the wall. I had pictures and different altar pieces and stuff like that. Now, this about 11 o'clock that morning, I called him. My sister answered, and I said, is he there? And she thought I was calling about a different topic. And I heard him in the background say, no, he wants to know what happened to his candles this morning. Tell him I'll call him tonight. He called me that night, and he said, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do what we did to you, but we've been trying to get your attention. You're not listening. Hopefully this gets your attention. And he goes, we did this in a way so you wouldn't be able to rationalize it with your analytical mind. I mean, who actually pours water on a candle wick and it explodes like a bazooka? There's no way you can rationalize that away. Do we have your attention now? One of many experiences I've had with him over the years is situations like that.
Interesting. When you say ceremony, are there drugs involved with this? Or
no, he did all those. Peyote and mezcalito and tonacol and San Pedro and all those. His story is a globally famous story, but he's not the principal character in the books. There was a UCLA student who wrote these stories back in the late 60s. And UCLA student wanted to meet this sorcerer shaman in Mexico. And the sorcerer shaman heard about it, but didn't want to meet the student. My brother-in-law actually happened to be apprenticing with this shaman. So what my brother-in-law did, with the permission of the shaman, was help this student write the books. Back in the 60s, 70s, 72, 3, 4, 5, thereabout, they became very, very well-known stories. So anyway, my brother-in-law, as a result of working with these shamans, because they took him one time for 9 weeks, every single day, had him doing ceremony with tonacol and peyote and things of this nature. And he's told all of us that work with him, he goes, I have the keys to bring these experiences to you guys without you guys actually having to ingest the medicinals, the allies, the things that people used to use or maybe still do use for alternate experiences.
Interesting. What's your brother-in-law's name?
My brother-in-law, you will not find anywhere. He has no social media. He's a healer. He lives in Sedona. His waiting list, he charges pretty much nothing. His waiting list is 800 people long. He shut down his waiting list. His name is Javier. We call him Don Javier. There is a Don Javier on YouTube. People look up. That is not my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law has zero social media presence. I mean, I make fun of him because he has a AOL email address. I mean, who has AOL email addresses? But he works as a healer here in Sedona. People come from all over the world for healing.
So I know you didn't go to the pyramid. You said your family did. You mentioned it's a power vortex. Do you think the pyramid is there or was built to harness power somehow?
Let me just pop around here. It's been a long day prior to us visiting, so if I get off track, just pull me right back on again.
That's all right. You mentioned a few words that I'm personally interested in, so I'm going to...
No, we're going to dig in, yeah.
Okay.
I live in Sedona, and Sedona is a very powerful place energetically. Sedona by the Hopi is known as home to the Ancient Ones. Now, the Ancient Ones, it's a whole different topic we're about to dig into here. Humans have been on the planet 5 times. We think this is human history, blah, blah, this epoch of human history, which we're actually eradicating ourselves again. We've been on the planet 5 times. Humans have been seeded on the planet by more highly evolved beings from other places and other universes and galaxies and dimensions and the multiverse. The pyramids were not built by the Egyptians. Even today, we don't know with, you know, engineering today, how they were built. They were not built by the Egyptians. They were built by more advanced civilizations and knowledge prior to the Egyptians. And they were built, even now, research is showing, geology is showing, even the Sphinx is 12,000 years old. It's not 4,000 or whatever, 5,000 or whatever they say it is. They know by the erosion on the side of the Sphinx, they know the age of the Sphinx at this point, and it's 12,000 years old, minimum. So all these things were created by ancient civilizations that have been on the planet prior to this epoch of human history.
Crazy. So what do you think? And you said you think there's been 5 separate, like, extinctions, if you will. And
as I've been told, we are on our 5th right now as a species. This can get really crazy. You know, working with a shaman, it's all non-ordinary reality. And a real shaman can also be a medium for energies. I mean, we're all mediums for energies because we all have consciousness. But my brother-in-law is able to bring, when we would go on these sacred journeys, let's say Machu Picchu or wherever, the days we're not doing ceremony at the sacred site, there are beings, energetic beings, that'll come through my brother-in-law, just one after another, after another, after another, after another, imparting wisdom and knowledge and training and education, and I guess knowledge from all over the universe is about mathematics and physics and all these kinds of things. So, talking about this 5th epoch of human history, we have been on the planet before. We've been seeded. I mean, where do you think humans came from? You know, this evolutionary theory that we evolved from, you know, single cells and all this kind of stuff is just not true. So we're seeded with intelligence from more highly evolved species in our multiverse. So humanity right now is an experiment. We are on the 5th epoch of human history, and we still can't get it right because we're destroying ourselves from the inside out by separation, by duality, not understanding that we are all of consciousness, we are all of universal and cosmic consciousness, so we're destroying ourselves again. If you look at this planet right now, we've eradicated 60% of species on this planet as it is right now. We are in the process right now of destroying the entire planet with climate change within the last 100 years. We are an extremely overpopulated planet, which for conscious reasons, there are many beings coming to this planet because they want to be here at this time in the history of the planet and the evolution of the planet and the consciousness of the planet. And we are heading for our next extinction again. And as I was told, this is what's caused it before. I don't know if it's true or not, but this is what I was told. And it's generally, I find, pretty accurate when I see history passing, is that AI has destroyed humanity before, and we've just started that process again.
Well, interesting. A couple things there. So you mentioned you don't buy the evolution thing, and you say we were seeded with intelligence. Do you mean that beings that were here before, or beings from like another planet, came here and like GMO'd some apes, and like they were their experiment or something? Or what do you mean?
No, it's an experiment. Humanity is an experiment in the evolution of consciousness of this particular being called the human being. But let me back up here. We're talking about some topics that literally we'd have to talk about for hours to even lay foundations. I'll do the best that I can.
No pressure.
You look at the universe that we live in. I mean, literally, we are one little mediocre sun, our sun. We've got this little bitty galaxy. There are billions and billions of suns in this galaxy with planets. There are billions and billions of galaxies in the universe. This is one universe of many universes. There are lesser and more advanced energies. We are an energy being all over the universes. So right now, human history, we're here as an experiment. We've been seeded by whatever species has seeded us. And some things I've not been given permission to mention names or different things over the years. I don't mean to be clandestine, esoteric, or any of that. I just know that beings have come before and they've said, do not speak our name. Do not share the name of our species or whatever it is. But let me give everybody listening, as crazy as this sounds, if you look at planet Earth, we live in a hierarchy on planet Earth. Let's say, for example, you have United Nations, you have a country, you have states, you have cities, you have municipalities, etc. There's a hierarchy. As above, so below. There are hierarchies in the universe. There are beings all over the universes that are more highly evolved and that are benevolent. There are beings that are more highly evolved that are malevolent. And there are beings that are lesser than us that are malevolent and benevolent as well. So we're just in the middle of evolution for this particular species that we've incarnated in at this point. So right now, everybody listening has chosen to incarnate into a human experience.
That's a lot. Jim, you mentioned also, I know we are jumping around, and I understand when you say these topics require a lot of context just to get started, to build a foundation, but we can also just have fun. I mean, I hear that, and you know, we're scheduled for about an hour, maybe a little over, and we're going to be limited by those parameters. But they're still interesting topics, and I don't really know people that I could ask these questions, talk to. So, like,
sure,
it's fun to me to ask somebody questions that gives this stuff a lot of thought to hear where they're at.
Mine is not. See, that's analytical 3D.
Okay,
mine is not thought. Mine is experience. Most everything that I share, I have viscerally experienced it, or it's come to me in dream time, or it's been imparted to me in some way, non-physical, and that I've had physical confirmation of it in some way as well.
Gotcha.
You know, we have to go back here a little bit less. We are an extremely primitive species. Look around. That needs no defense. We destroy our planet like it's nothing. For what? For greed, for money, for the illusion of security and control. You know, human beings fight for territory like dogs. Look at that. I mean, look at Putin fighting for territory like dogs fight for a piece of meat, wild dogs, you know? So humans are a very, very low-functioning species that have the ability to be very high-functioning species, but we're not. Most of humanity is completely asleep and completely blind to the evolution of the energy and the consciousness within. So when we talk about these things, more than anything, you'll get people, I'm used to it. People telling me that I'm stupid, I'm crazy, I'm a conspiracy theorist, I'm this, I'm that. I don't listen because if I told you, for example, I have a brown couch in my living room, you could argue all day long. You've never been in my living room. You don't know what's in my living room. So I've had these non-ordinary experiences. I know what I've experienced, and I've experienced beyond ordinary reality. Most of us live our lives as ordinary reality. I am Bob Smith, so to speak, Jim Fortin. I wake up, I pay my bills, I go to work, I do this for a living. That's a tiny, 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 tiny fraction of the totality of who and what we are.
How do you think you get the information that's coming through these experiences? Do you think that you are just able to practice like tuning to a frequency so that you could pick up the signal that is there?
In shamanism, it's developing your sense. Your sense is your higher awareness tapping in the higher mind. So developing this sense only in my experience, as I've been taught, because somebody else might be able to do this as well, but they've had a different experience in getting here, or a different training, or a different kind of a mentor, or shaman, or babalawo, or sorcerer, or whatever it is. And by the way, in these things that I talk about, being a shaman, a babalawo, a sorcerer, there's a lot of charlatans out there, and there are people trying to make a lot of money and trying to capitalize on it and all these kind of things. Real shamans do not charge, meaning for the healing work they do, they're not allowed to. So I've learned, I've been indoctrinated over the, and that's a good word, indoctrinated over the years, is we have to let go of our self-importance. We have to let go of our ego. We have to let go of our past history, and we actually have to live in balance. Balance is not work-life balance. Balance is balancing the higher aspect of us with the lower aspect of us. The higher aspect is higher mind. Lower aspect is our 3D ego. So once we start making these things work, it's like putting them on a wheel and starting to spin the wheel, metaphorically speaking. Once we can start making these things work, we start automatically, it happens, we start developing our higher senses, our higher awareness. Now, part of it, now all this, all of our paths are already destined at a dharmic level. But for me, my entire family was healers before I ever even got to the planet. My grandfather, who I never met, was a healer. My mom, of course, who I knew, was a healer. My brother-in-law is a shaman. So it's just written in the stars that I am on this particular path and part of my energetic lineage.
So like you're referencing your, to answer the question, you feel like you cultivate or you develop this sense.
Correct.
And it's like, as you practice that tapping into that sense, you get better at it. You can receive information.
Correct.
More easily, or it's more available to you.
Great distillation. A phrase that I live from is called anima mundi, A-N-I-M-A-M-U-N-D-I. Anima mundi is the recognition, here's the key, recognition's analytical, the awareness, the knowing that we are connected energetically to every single thing on the planet. When we actually function in anima mundi, anybody listening can look it up, it's ancient. This is how, because I once asked my brother-in-law, how did you become a shaman? And he goes, I ascended to that state when I learned to live from and in anima mundi, which is connection to all relatives on the planet. It's awareness of this, but it's also an appreciation and a gratitude and a merging with every, not emerging, but merging with everything on the planet and treating it with respect and kindness and love.
I want to learn more about how you use these things to help folks, but there's one other thing. Let me look at my notes here. Oh, you mentioned the planet is overpopulated. What makes you say it's overpopulated? I mean, I think as a percentage of like the mass people take up, it's kind of small.
That's an interesting comment in that you look at what the planet can sustain, but that's a 3D way to look at it. The way that I have been shown this and taught this is that for the size of this planet, relative to planets of other similar sizes that are inhabited in the universe, our planet is severely overpopulated in beings compared to other comparable sized planets at other places and other universes. So this is what I don't know. I'm taking it at face value because I've been given a fair amount at face value over the years, but I've been given also visceral confirmation and empirical confirmation of what's been given to me. Meaning, okay, you tell me this, but I used to be a doubting Thomas many years ago. I was like, okay, whatever, yeah, blah, blah. But I've seen so much confirmation of things over the years that I'm like, now, like, okay, that's normal for me. I mean, I'll come back to your question, but discussions at the dinner table of my family with my brother-in-laws here are literally next galaxy types of conversations, things that are happening on the planet. You know, I'll come back to the question again, but you talk about people use the word, it's so alien to me to use the word alien. What the hell are you talking about aliens? We're all just floating on rocks in space, all the different universes. You know, somebody might be an alien to us, but we're an alien to them if we're living in their particular point in space and time. So I don't work from that position that, oh, aliens, and which is where most humans work from. I work from the whole universe is connected, and we're related and connected to everything in the universes. And I don't mean in a benevolent way as well. There are many malevolent beings in the universes that fight for control, just like things people on the planet do. Humans are just a small representative of what exists in the actual universes. I lost track of my thought, which I said twice I'd come back to. That main question was what?
It was about the the idea of the potential for us to be over, or the opinion that we're overpopulated.
Okay, so this I'm taking at face value. My brother-in-law was saying that because of this particular time, I don't have any major comment on it, at this time in the evolution of human consciousness, which the planet's changing right now, there are a lot of beings that wanted to come to this planet to be here at this time for this evolution of consciousness. It's an awakening. Let me back up even further here. What awakening are we talking about? Good friend of mine. It's a guy named Gary Zukav. You ever heard of him before?
Nope.
Okay. Gary was on Oprah 36 times. He literally is a spiritualist. Very, very, very well-known spiritualist. One of the best known of the 90s. Good friends of Ram Dass, Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, all these kind of people. Gary and I are great friends. He's got a new book out called The Universal Human. And that book is about by the way, things that we're seeing now, I've been told about for 25 years. Look what's happening on the planet. So let me stop talking and let me ask, what do you see happening on the planet right now?
I see definitely a lot of suffering, a lot of like striving and like ego driven or collective egos driving people or groups of people or institutions to increase power, impose power over others, like things that I would ultimately think are generally negative for humanity, but they're born out of the individual sufferings of those people. Like when you don't, you know, everybody's got their issues, and in many people without awareness, you inflict manifestations of your issues on others or your environment, and collectively over time it snowballs and you have a lot of problems on a, I guess, population level, on a
cultural, societal level, global level?
Yeah, so that's a great response. I mentioned Gary because we can only touch on it a little bit here, but he's got a good book called The Universal Human, where he explains this as well. What he explains in his book, Don Javier has explained to me for literally 28 years now, even though I said 25. Humanity is in transition right now. We are in the middle of evolution right now. And look in the world right now. Look what you're seeing. You're seeing social structures collapsing. You're seeing governments collapsing. You're seeing political structures collapsing. You're seeing economies collapsing. And if you're not aware, these are people listening, look at the United States government. It's crumbling under debt right now. The United States is on the verge of economic collapse. You look at BRICS, B-R-I-C-S, the Soviet-initiated bloc of depegging the world from the dollar and destabilizing the U.S. dollar. You're seeing social unrest all around the world. You're seeing all this destabilization because you mentioned the word power. All the old, non-authentic power structures of humanity are crumbling and collapsing. The planet is also in the midst of energetic change. I had right here in my desk, let me grab it somewhere, magnets. Did you know that, for example, do you recognize that you're bioelectromagnetic?
Yes.
We're all bioelectromagnetic beings. And what's happening right now, I got a good kick out of it looking at the news about a week, 2 weeks ago. Scientists were saying, well, we think what's happening on Earth won't affect humans. That shows their lack of understanding and awareness and knowledge. What's happening on the planet right now, you can go on YouTube, you can find the bazillion videos on magnetic poles shifting on the planet. The North magnetic pole is becoming the South, and the South is becoming the North. This has happened before. Now, we can say that's no big deal. You're bioelectromagnetic. So you're magnetized. Like you can take, I don't have anything on my desk. You can take a big magnet and put a little magnet on it. And a little magnet's going to become magnetized to the big magnet. You're on planet Earth, which is the big magnet. You're the little magnet. What happens to the big magnet is going to affect the little magnet. The big magnet is destabilized and unstable and shifting right now. The core in the center of the Earth has already rotated or changed directions of its rotation as of recently. The planet is very unstable electromagnetically because of the shift, and people think it doesn't affect them, but that's one of the things causing so much emotional instability on the planet right now. And we see in terms of the social unrest and the economic collapse and the chaos, it's happening because of the frazzled consciousness electromagnetically on the planet.
Interesting. I mean, could it also be happening because of like social media and everybody's brain is like exposed to so much different stuff now? It's all kind of recent.
Of course it could, but that's the secondary. The primary is what are the inner... We have to look at... Okay, so let me ask you, Les...
Like, why is the changing? I have heard that. I don't really understand magnetism too much, but I have heard that the poles are moving or shifting or have shifted. Or how do we know that that's not an improvement for us? Like, how do we know that that's negative? You said it's happened before. Do you know when that was, when it happened before?
I don't know. It's like 80,000 years.
Oh, a long time ago. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't back in 1921.
Gotcha. Okay.
But you're asking a great question where you're going. Please continue.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, early in this talk, you talked about like transformation and, you know, like everything is always in transition. Energy is always like changing forms or, you know, going from chemical to electrical or whatever. And I don't really understand how the magnetism plays into that, but there's things shifting and like this process you said we're evolving now, like there's this, like all this stuff, energetic stuff, matter, consciousness, thoughts, beliefs, is all like a collective mush of stuff of a planet that is changing, is shifting around. Energy is transforming from this state to that state, and maybe the magnetism is affecting that also, and maybe there's like a destabling phase of that, and then when it settles, maybe that's a good thing, where it's like, oh, now we're in a better magnetic state. Like, how do we know? If, let's say we're in the cocoon right now, you know, and it's changing, right, or whatever, how do we know what's on the other
side? Yeah, there's so many people that may be talking about things that I'm talking about, and they act as if they're the end-all, be-all authority on things. I know less than everyone watching or listening right now, because I know that the more that I know, the less that I know. It's the paradox of life. And all I know is what I've experienced. I don't even know what I've been told. I can repeat what I've been told, but I don't know that because I was just told it.
Right.
All that I know, and I don't even know that I know that, but all that I know is what I've experienced and recapitulating that and sharing it. And these experiences, let me give you an example to go back to your question. So I gave that preference because I don't want to come across as, oh, I know it all and I'm the end all be it. No, I don't know. But to answer your question is, as I understand it, the shifts that are happening are like on Earth, the four seasons, the winter time. Things must die for new things to be reborn. And we are evolving to a higher level of consciousness as a species, and the old structures are collapsing so that new structures can rebirth for a higher level of frequency and function. Now, we're hopping around all over the place. I mean, this is a ginormous conversation.
It's fun. What kind of new structures? Like what?
Beings that function from higher levels of consciousness.
So basically just better versions of us, like
humans 2.0. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha.
Humans 2.0, 3.0. Okay. The example that I was given is, do you use Windows or do you use Apple?
I use Apple.
Okay. I use Apple too. But let's say you got Windows. What's Windows on now?
11, I don't know.
10? I don't know.
I'm not much of a computer person.
When you go from Windows 8, Windows 10 is better than Windows 8. It's still the computer, but it's a higher functioning operating system. So we as a species are going to a higher level functioning operating system. Let me back up even further here to, let's make this tangible. Have you recognized or paid any attention or had any awareness about the level of, I'm going to use this word for explanation and then we'll change the word, but autism on the planet, but we call it the spectrum now. Have you been aware that autism has exploded on the planet since the 1980s?
I'm aware, yes.
Okay. Now, I was asking my brother-in-law about that, and he said it's because the beings that are coming to the planet now, meaning the souls that are incarnating into the bodies, are incarnating at a higher level of frequency than generations prior. They're here for what's coming for a higher functioning species. Now, these beings are incarnating, and they're incarnating many times into lower frequency families and parents. But the reason a lot of these beings are having a hard time on the planet, they can't stand loud noise. They don't want to be touched. They have problems with bright lights. They have problems functioning because they're working at higher frequencies. That's why many of these beings that are coming have gifts. They can look at an entire city, see it one time, and then, you know, sketch the whole thing out. They can listen to a piece of music here one time and be able to play like an entire symphony. They're coming at higher levels, and they started around 1980 when this level of functioning and being started showing up on the planet. Now, you're seeing it in the 20-somethings now on the planet. My generation, I was in college and high school in the 80s. People were all chasing money and jobs and social status and prestige and material things. Now, kids are chasing impact and meaning and social causes and humanity and oneness and all these kind of things. Generation prior was not chasing. So we're looking at these kids, seeing them also as a manifestation as the higher frequencies coming to planet Earth. If you want me to put all this together, I'm not the person to talk to because I don't know where it's all going. But I know, I do see, looking around, I see the collapse on the planet because I can feel it also. I can feel like when we have really high solar function days, solar storms, I can feel them. I feel like hell on those particular days. Celestial events, lunar events, I can feel them. So I know things are happening on the planet. But where's it all going to end up? When and how? I personally think it's going to be like a hurricane. When it hits Florida, everything is just trashed and flipped upside down. Now we got to rebuild. If I had to guess, and I am only guessing, that's what we're heading for right now. And we're literally in the middle of that.
Interesting. So what does that have to do with people? Why are there too many people? Like, don't we need people to work through and navigate whatever unfolds, whatever challenges or situation there is to rebuild?
You know, it's a really interesting question that you asked there.
Or is it all going to be the robots? And
what I said earlier was, and only what I was told, is it's kind of like, put it this way. I'll use a human metaphor. Let's say that I used to live in New York. I used to live in New York City. And if you live in New York, you avoid Times Square like the plague. You just don't go. And especially New Year's Eve. But New Year's Eve, all these hundreds of thousands of people go to Times Square for the big party. That's what we're doing right now on the planet with all these people that are coming. They're here for the big party, which is the evolution and transition of consciousness.
Interesting. All right. I feel like we could go for a long time in these directions, and I would have fun with it. And I get the sense you would too. But you do work with people, and you help them. It seems like you use other tools like hypnosis. How does the way, man, how do we get out? You mentioned pyramid, and my brain just went, boop. You flipped the switch, which I don't think we actually ever answered. So I have to ask your opinion on that. So you feel like that was built by like previous
civilizations.
And I think you mentioned Graham Hancock. I think he's even mentioned ideas about that being some type of maybe a power source. Or do you have an opinion of what that was for?
If I had to guess, it would be an interdimensional portal.
To communicate to other beings in other dimensions?
Correct.
Or to transport?
To communicate. It's kind of like, to put in human terms, it'd be like a really high-tech satellite phone. But there's also been, and Don Javier never told me this, I just did some of my own research, but it's been a lot of years. But let me explain why. Because I don't want to come across as half-baked. I don't care. Now, what I mean by that is no disrespect to anyone or anything, because I used to be like the ardent student of all the learning and all the books and all the teachings and just an experience. I'm never going to understand. I'm never, ever, ever in this physical lifetime going to have the ability to understand the infiniteness of life. People try to figure out life. I don't care. I don't try to figure out life because there's nothing to figure out. What I know is we're hopping around. I still haven't answered your question to a full degree. What I know is this. I do know this because I've been there. A lot of people will say things like, a lot of people believe in, it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what anyone believes. What is what is. But people will say they believe in past lives. There is no such thing as a past life. It's simply a different life. Everyone listening right now or watching is living one life and one life only, and that's the energy and the soulful energy in them. But the other lives we think are different lives are the incarnations in different ways and of that energy. So it's your life is a continuity that is Google, if you want to put it in the years, Googles of years old. And we just incarnate and leave, incarnate and leave, incarnate and leave. An example would be, you've been to Sedona, you had mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Did you rent a car when you came here?
I don't think so, no.
You ever been anywhere and you've rented a car while you're on vacation?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so you go somewhere, let's slow down. You travel somewhere, you land, you rent the car, you drive around, it's time to go home, you leave the car, and you go home. Right?
Okay. I see the analogy. Okay.
Same thing with the human body. That is your car. You come, you rent the car, the body, you live here, you go on vacation, you go home. You go on a vacation again, you rent the car, you travel around, you go home. So we tend to think foolishly that humanity's foolishness is mind-blowing to me, and it has been since I was a teen. We bury people, and then people for money say, let's put them in a coffin lined in lead and Teflon and all the titanium and all these kind of things so that your loved one will be preserved for infinity. That loved one is gone. That body is gone. Let me go here, then we'll try to come back to your question again. There was a movie that it was back in 1986, and I saw it in college, my senior year, and I thought, that's a really cool movie. It's called The Serpent and the Rainbow, and it's based on a true story. They will tell you that in the movie. It's based on a true story. When I saw that movie, I'm like, that's a cool movie. I have experienced some of the things that I saw in that movie 30 years ago. I just watched it again last year, and I'm like, whoa, I experienced that working with a shaman. So back to your question.
But would you have experienced it because you saw it when you were younger, and it there's like a seed in your subconscious?
No. One's watching it. The other is experiencing it.
Okay.
I experienced it with my brother-in-law when we were actually on Isla del Sol in Peru. Now, there's light and dark, yin and yang in the universe. It takes both. We have forces at work, like George Lucas pulled all of Star Wars through him by tapping into consciousness. So we have light and we have dark. We have beings that are working towards bringing more advancement and growth to the species. We have beings that are working to pull the species back into control and dominate the species and use the species. Anybody can find this stuff online. But when we were in Peru one time, I won't share it all here, I was attacked mentally in ways that were excruciating. And I asked, I didn't say anything to Don Javier. And the very next day, I didn't say a word to him. And I was in a lot of pain. And he says, do you know what's happening to you? And I said, no, I don't. What's happening to me? He goes, we come down here to bring light. That's why we're doing ceremony. You're being attacked by beings that don't want us to bring light. And they're attacking the vulnerabilities inside of you energetically. Your hates, your fears, your angers. And they're feeding on it and then turning all that up 1,000 degrees. That's why you're feeling the excruciating pain that you're feeling. You've got to let go of those things in yourself. So I had that experience, and I've had others like that. That corresponds to what I was talking about in the movie, The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Okay. You mean, so you watched a movie where that was being portrayed, and then you had this experience decades later where
right.
you felt that. Okay.
And then I'm like, whoa, now I understand. The movie was just a movie. I'd forgotten about it. But when I had these experiences that were literally excruciating mentally, almost bordering on schizophrenia, and the person that was with me, or with the group of us, was an MD who was a national expert in schizophrenia. And I said, Todd, he's an MD, but I'm like, Todd, I think I'm experiencing schizophrenia. And he's like, you're not schizophrenic, trust me. I'm like, Todd, listen to me. And then the next day, Don Javier is like, this is what's happening to you. There are beings that are so powerful, they can affect other people on the planet energetically. It happens all the time. Many people do these things for many malevolent reasons. Voodoo can be used malevolently. Many ancient cultures know these things. But we in the Western world are completely oblivious to these things. And you don't have to worry about them unless you mess with them. The example that I've told people is, I don't even know if it exists anymore. I think it does a little. I've done a little research on what people call the mafia. If you don't mess with the mafia, you don't have to be concerned about the mafia. You go mess with them, you got to be concerned. So the same thing with these energies. Don't mess with them, you ain't got to be concerned. So anybody listening, don't go putting tinfoil hats on your head thinking, oh my God, I'm going to protect myself from the energies. You ain't got to worry about it. But when you're around power, like I am with a shaman, when you're around power, you've got to be careful because you don't play with power. That's dangerous.
Interesting. Yeah, I would like to... We have had someone that called himself a shaman on here. And I don't know where the line is from calling yourself one and being one. I would imagine that a shaman wouldn't refer to themselves as a shaman.
Very wide. Correct. You are correct. A real shaman will not enter. Oh, I'm Bob Smith. I'm a shaman. They don't do that. They don't do it. Real shamans can actually even affect your assemblage points in the body, the way the body's energetically put together. You could be standing next to a shaman and not even physically see them because they've affected your assemblage points so severely. I have seen things.
What did you say? I've never heard that. Assemblage points?
Assemblage points.
What is that referring to?
It's like an energetic puzzle, and it fits together in certain energetic ways. Let me share something here before we're jumping around a lot and I'm moving really fast.
We are.
But
you,
like
we
ayahuasca.
Are and you are.
Huh?
We are and you are.
Yeah. Well, you're asking, and I was like, this is hours of conversation.
Me. Okay.
But I just want to share a potential warning for people. So a lot of people are into doing ayahuasca and things like that right now, and going to ayahuasca ceremonies. And my brother-in-law is telling me that's very dangerous for a lot of people unless they're in the Amazon with a real shaman or somewhere that they are with a real shaman. And the reason why is when you're dealing with ayahuasca, you're dealing with higher energies, which is why many people say they have these experiences. But the example would be, let's say that you took a glove off your hand, okay? Then you put the glove back on your hand, but you couldn't get the glove where all the fingers were fitting perfectly. So when you're doing ayahuasca, you're being pulled out of the body. Many practitioners of ayahuasca ceremonies can't integrate the person doing the journey all the way properly back, like the fingers and the body. Then these people are having nightmares, they're having suicidal thoughts, their businesses are falling apart. Many things that are happening. Doesn't happen to everyone, but some people have very bad experiences afterwards because they weren't properly integrated back into the body again after doing the ayahuasca ceremonies. So I just wanted to share that, take it for whatever it's worth. And I got off track again. I'm sorry.
I think that probably holds true for a lot of compounds that like alter your state of consciousness. I know I've been experienced, I think, a little bit of that too when tinkering with some of those things.
Yeah.
Just a little bit though. So you have clearly put a lot of time into like learning and then has been fortunate enough to have many profound experiences that I guess shaped and informed the way you view the world or the universe. And I assume you pull from that in your like coaching strategies or process.
Very wise.
How so? Like, what does that look like? How are you using this kind of vast spectrum of information that you pull, that you have tapped into to help Sally or Joe, who wants, what did you say earlier, better, more?
They don't want more, better, different. They want
more, better, different.
Like,
yeah.
If they could reinvent themselves. That's a brilliant question. Thank you for that, because I do not talk about these things in my air quote marketing. People are running for the hills going, that guy's crazy. My podcast has 4.5 million downloads. And what I find is that I attract people that resonate with everything that you and I are talking about. And the reason why, electromagnetics, frequency. We gravitate towards our own frequency. Now, in my programs, a lot of transformational work started back in the 1970s by a guy named Werner Erhard. EST, LifeSpring, Landmark Forum, organizations like that, which are, air quote, personal development companies. Werner Erhard studied shamanism. There are principles, human behavioral principles in shamanism. I take these and I concretize them into my 13-week program called the Transformational Coaching Program, not a fancy name, but where I work people through 13 weeks. And the first week would be, for example, let's not go to the first. We'd have a week on, let's say, self-integrity. That's a principle in shamanism, though it's not called that. But I've been taught it through shamanism well before I ever started teaching it transformationally. So self-integrity is doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. Now, tying research into this because I try to concretize everything that I share. There was a study, Dr. Gerald Zaltman at Harvard Business School, where he did a study on self-integrity. And what he found after an extensive study is when people are self-integral, and that is doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. When people are self-integral to themselves, their productivity goes up anywhere between 1 and 400% with no additional input. Meaning just doing what you say you're going to do when you speak the words. But then I bring the ancient wisdom in, energy, frequency, vibration. Everything we speak our lives into existence. Then we go back to the science again, Dr. Zaltman, or John Jenkins at Harvard, where behaviorally, psychologically, when we live from self-integrity and we do what we say we're going to do, I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow. I'm going to start eating right. But then we could say, well, Jim, I have a good intention, but I get off track. Well, then in the training, we also go to the way that your brain actually operates, habituates your reality, which research also shows that 95% of every decision you make is already brain-based, made for you, even while you think you're making the decision. I show people how to take all this apart for better self-management. So it's a combination of the neuroscience, the ancient wisdom / shamanism, and the transformational psychology all rolled up into one. That makes sense.
Yeah, a good bit. You mentioned on your, your bio mentions your master hypnotist.
Right.
Do you still use that and integrate that like as a tool in that process?
Yeah, we teach that in time. Well, what happens was is every week builds on itself. So week number four, we teach self-hypnosis, basically how to reprogram the brain. The reason you want to reprogram the brain, that's not mumbo jumbo, that's not woo-woo, is according to the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Germany, as I just said, 95% of everything you do is already determined in the brain, even while you're thinking about it. Well, what I do is when you're using self-hypnosis, you're literally creating new neural pathways in the brain. So when you're doing self-hypnosis, which we teach you how to do, you're also retraining your brain by creating neural pathways to create new habits and new behaviors. So all of it is meshed together, and we build as we go, and we practice as we go over 13 weeks.
Have you personally, Jim, used the self-hypnosis to change any beliefs or habits or things for yourself?
All the time. And self-hypnosis, people think it's trance. And it can't excuse the sniffling. Weather change today.
How dare you sniffle on a podcast?
I'm in a body. This body responds.
The nerve.
Yeah, the weather changed from cold this morning to warm this afternoon. And we have, it's a heavy pollen area where I live as well. So we tend to think that hypnosis is watch the watch and trance and all that. Yeah, it can be that. I teach trance. I teach literally a process where we can slow down and get in our minds and start to rewire it through thinking particular things, rote thinking. People don't recognize anything you say to yourself is a suggestion. That suggestion is a command to your subconscious mind. So that suggestion could be the F word that women use. I'm so fat. I'm so fat. I'm so fat. I'm so fat. The more you say these things, it's hard to make money. I'm broke. I can't get ahead. I can never do this. People don't like me. A, B, C, D, E. All these things that people say is literally wiring your brain. That literally also is self-hypnosis. That literally is auto-suggestion. So I'm very careful about what I say to myself. And I just recognized I need to be even more careful about what I say about the pollen where I live. Because if a person has a belief, I'm learning my lessons too. But if a person has a belief, I go back to we speak our life into existence. So I've got to be careful because every word you speak is creating for you. That in itself is more auto. It's more mechanical self-hypnosis. It is a suggestion to yourself. I've used it for health. I've used it for wellness. I've used it for money. Right now, it's paid for. I live in a several million dollar home. It's brand new. It was finished as of today, after 3 years. I grew up dirt poor. This is the biggest thing people deal with. I grew up a poor Texas farm boy. We had no money. I stayed broke till I was in my 30s. I have a couple of college degrees. I did a lot of things in different places, and people were like, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? This is what my program is all about. What we learn as a child is what our self-image is. What our self-image is what we perpetuate because it's literally wired in the brain. We've got to rewire the brain through education, which is in the program, and rehabitualizing the thoughts to rewire the brain to create new habits in life. We literally learn, we live our lives from what we become as kids, self-image psychology.
You mentioned you've used hypnosis for health purposes. Anything you'd touch on about that? Are there any particular...
Yeah, absolutely. Doctors are baffled. I had heart failure in February of 2020. Doctors have no idea why. 6 months later, I had a stroke. Today, I'm perfectly healthy. Here's the thing. Doctors will tell you, and if you need medical care, get it. Okay.
But you had heart failure, like you had a heart attack or?
No, not a heart attack. I had a heart failure. My heart was functioning at 31% of capacity. I ended up in the hospital for 4 days. I had zero energy. I went to the ER. They're like, you're in heart failure. Put me in the hospital. Recovered from that. 6 months later, I had a hemorrhagic stroke. I was just in the house. Boom, I was gone. I was out. As I was told, I left the planet for just a few minutes. And I healed perfectly. Here's the thing.
You mean the stroke, like the clot healed itself? Or
I'm perfectly healed. I'm functioning like nothing ever happened to me. Better health than I've ever been in before. But I used my self-talk. I used principles in the transformational coaching program that I teach to help me heal, to get me back to better than perfect health again. I guess you can't be better than perfect, but I mean, really, really good health. I'm 59, and I'm in better health and better shape than most people half my age. Why? Because I know my brain doesn't control me. I have to use my mind to control the brain. Most of us let our brain control us through habituation. We live our habits day after day after day. You've got to use the power of your conscious thinking to reshape your brain to create what you want in life. What I wanted to create is perfect health, that I've done it.
That's fascinating. Did you change any like habits that might affect health along the way? Like, did you use the believing or like the building of the belief of your health, like also help other interventions take place or?
Nope. Here's where I work from. Here's what I have adopted since then is, and my brother-in-law brought this to my awareness. I like cars. This ego, this container of skin, likes cars.
Cars are cool.
So I generally drive either Mercedes or Porsches, but I've got a couple of Porsches. I'm going to drive Porsche right now. And my brother-in-law said to me one day, living in Sedona, we don't have a Porsche dealership. He goes, when your Porsche, if you needed help with your Porsche, would you go to the local mechanic or would you go down to the dealership and have somebody that's experienced working on Porsches working on your Porsche? And I said, well, I would go down to Scottsdale, Phoenix. And he goes, that's correct. You want somebody that represents the manufacturer that knows what they're doing to work on your Porsche. So it goes the same thing with your body. So who's the manufacturer? What's the manufacturer of your body? Consciousness. Now, in religion, they call it God. You can call it divine mind. You can call it consciousness scientifically. You can call it the quantum field, whatever. It's energy. So why would I go to the doctor, so to speak? Doctors don't heal jack. They don't. They diagnose. And I know because I've got a lot of doctors in my, or I've had a lot of doctors in my program. And doctors will tell you all day long, you're sick. You have this, you have that, you have this, you have that. If you buy what the doctor tells you, that will become your experience because your cells in your body will mold to that. We need to learn to use the mind and recognize that all healing comes through energy and the mind, not the body. The body does not heal predominantly. The mind heals the body. And to prove that, how many people have you seen on medication? Doctor says, here, take this for anxiety. Take this for depression. And they take it. It's a medicine. And they still have anxiety and depression or whatever it is. We've got to use the mind to heal the body. That's going to the manufacturer.
That's cool. I'm always very interested in healing-related stories. I find them inspiring, too. Did you have to have any like medical interventions at the hospital for that? Or did you just have to like wait it out? Like, did you need surgeries or anything for those positions? Wow.
No, nothing.
And then how long did that take you? So you said 6 months after a heart failure diagnosis, you had a stroke. That was probably a bad day. And then how long after that do you feel like you felt tip top?
Couple of months.
Oh, fast, huh?
Yeah, it's fast. But here's the thing. I was in the gym one day working out afterwards, and I said to myself, okay, Jim, you got to take it easy because you had a stroke a couple of months ago. And I've worked out for, I mean, I'm 59. I've been working out since I was in my 20s in the gym. And I said, wait just a minute, Jim. Assuming you didn't have a stroke, how would you work out differently? What would you be doing differently? Assuming you did not have a stroke and heart failure, how would you be working out differently right now? And I said, well, I'd be pushing myself harder. I'd be doing this. I'd be doing that, et cetera, et cetera. So what I started doing is working out under the assumption that I was already 100% well. And within a couple of weeks, I started feeling noticeably and dramatically better. I'm not telling anyone to not listen to their doctor's advice or whatever. I'm just telling you how I healed. Was I assumed that I was already 100% well, which means I'm also talking to my brain. My cells in my body are going to follow that. And I actually assumed I was already well. And I started assuming behaviors as if I was already well. And very quickly, I was like, heck, I feel great again. And it was very, very quick. I don't want to segue too far, but I interviewed a guy. You can find him on YouTube. His name is Bob Cafaro, C-A-R-F-A-R-O. I saw him on YouTube and I invited him on my podcast. That guy was diagnosed with terminal multiple sclerosis. He said, I ain't doing it. 6 weeks later, I'm going to be back at work again. Doctors are like, how are you going to do that? He had like 80 lesions on his brain or something like that. I mean, the guy was in bad shape. He's perfectly healthy and perfectly well today. I had one of my students that's an MD say, modern medicine keeps people in healing mediocrity. So the final comment here is when I was in the hospital and doctors said, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, this is going to happen. My thought was, BS, none of that is going to happen to me. I am going to decide what happens to me. And what I decided is what I'm living today.
That's great. I know also myself, I have experienced some positive shifts of my physical health or how my health is like manifested physically after really like surrendering to like practicing beliefs and thoughts as if I was already healed from them and had some positive effects. And, you know, it brings out such an obvious point because when a company in the medical field wants to study some intervention, it's always so important to control for the placebo effect, which begs the question, like, well, they have to control for it because it's real, but then they miss the boat on like, well, how do we get that placebo effect to be the wind to our sails? Like, why aren't we trying to tap into that more? Why are we fighting that? It's like it's the enemy in science instead of like,
correct.
Oh, how do we harmonize this amazing phenomenon for our benefit and the benefit of our loved ones and our communities and, you know, society as a whole?
Let me go there. When I got out of the hospital, the first place I went after the stroke, the hospital that day, I went right to my brother-in-law's house for dinner. All that he said to me was, now you can help more people after this. What I learned in the hospital through observation, and the hardest part of the hospital, both of them, was not being in the hospital, was not the physicality of what was going on with me, was the energy in the hospital, because I'm clairsentient. I can feel energy. The pain, the fear in hospitals is suffocating for me. I would rather have slept in the parking lot than inside the hospital, because in the hospital, that energy of the fear in there is so suffocating. People are fearful something's going to happen to them when everyone's going to leave the planet anyway. But what I learned about medicine is to your point. So what medicine says is, oh, we've studied this 1,000 people only as an example. Now, this 1,000 people doesn't know jack about using their mind or how to use their mind or the power of their mind or the power of consciousness. They're all sick because they're all living in the body. Doctors look at this 1,000 people and say, well, here's best case evidence of these 1,000 people. This is what's going to happen to you. They're projecting the mediocrity of human understanding of healing onto every single patient that comes in the hospital. What I tell people is this, Bob said the same thing in his interview, is accept the diagnosis, but not the prognosis. That's where we shoot ourselves in the foot. Whatever doctors tell me, I don't care, I don't give a crap, I don't listen to, because I know that I can heal myself, period. And we have to work from that place. But when doctors say, you know what, Les, you're going to be sick. It's going to take you years. You probably won't have full recovery. You buy into that, that's exactly what's going to happen to you.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the future generations, like, who might be more open-minded to some of these ideas, how they, as they go into the medical field, if that shifts a little bit and their approach is a little bit different. We'll see how that unfolds. I'll be cautiously optimistic on that idea.
I agree.
Jim, this is fun. You know, this was unexpected, and I'm glad your team reached out. This was fun. We had touched on a lot of things. There was one thing that we did not touch on, but we've gone on a bit, but you mentioned sacred geometry earlier, which I do find very interesting. I want to learn more about. Maybe we'll do a round two sometime, and you could share some ideas behind that. But I really appreciate you taking the time for the conversation today.
Let me give something to your guest before we go, if that's okay.
Sure. Go ahead, man.
Doesn't mean to interrupt. Is that okay? Everything comes down to our ways of being. Be to have. We must be before we can do, before we can have. About my healing, so I wanted to have perfect health again. How was I being? Notice I'd mentioned I was being very careful, very cautious, very living in my past. When I said I'm going to be a person who assumes I'm already well, I changed the way I was being. We don't understand what it even means to be. We have become human doings. I have a program. I'm not selling it to anybody. I do sell it, but for your listeners that have stayed around this long, I want to give it to them. It's a $97 9-day challenge called the Be Do Have Challenge. Now, we have changed the name for marketing reasons called Get Unstuck, but it's still all the Be to Have training. This training will walk you through understanding what it even means to be. Because when you understand what it means to be, because we are beings, that is ultimate power. And from there, you can create anything you want. You can do anything you want, and you can have anything you want when you first be it. So what you want to do is go to jimforten.com. JIMFORTIN.com/mindful. And you can download the program there, listen to it. We've got a 93% completion rate after 9 days, which is huge for a 9-day challenge, but it'll help you find your power so you can be more powerful, so you can do more, so you can have more in life. Sorry for that long segue, but I want people to have this so they can become more powerful. They can create more in life.
All right. I appreciate the offer to the listeners, and I encourage you all to check it out. Thanks again for the listeners. Always grateful for your listening. And Jim, thank you again for taking the time. And if they want to learn more, they go to jimforten.com.
Correct.
And / mindful, and for that gift of the 9-day challenge. Jim, thanks a lot. And hopefully our paths cross again sometime.
Thank you again, Les. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening.